Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the War Report. I am sorry that we are 7 minutes late coming on. We have a full house, and we have people from all over California, and we had difficulties getting everyone on and synchronized. Cell phone issues, landline issues, and et cetera. We finally got things worked out, and it's time to go. We're late, so I'm going to go right into this. For those of you who have not seen our promo for this week, the show this week was prompted by an event that took place 9 days ago here in Los Angeles. Eli Broad, billionaire, who has had his hands in the shaping and reshaping of public education across the nation, announced that he wanted to double the size of charter schools here in Los Angeles from over 100 to over 200, with the ultimate goal of turning Los Angeles into at least a 50-50 charter public school district, much like New Orleans, Chicago, and New York, Detroit. That prompted a response from a lot of us here, and myself included, so that I put together this show. Our guests are people who, as I said, are in Northern California all the way down to Southern California, our parents, advocates, and activists for public education, myself and another gentleman, teacher, activist, advocate, and et cetera. I'm going to bring them in, and they'll do a short intro bio for themselves, and then we'll get right to our subject. Jack, let me start with you.
Okay. I'm Jack Gerson. I'm a retired teacher from Oakland, California. I taught in the New York City public schools in the 1970s, and then I taught in Oakland. In Oakland, I was a teacher activist in movements to defend public education, as well as the Oakland Teachers Union, the Oakland Education Association.
Okay. Nina?
Hi. I'm down in San Diego. I publish a local progressive bilingual newspaper, and I've been involved in the Charter School Watch since 2006.
When you introduce yourself, give your last name as well, please.
Oh, sorry. Nina Deerfield.
Okay. And Jack, you Jack Gerson?
Okay. I just introduced myself a minute ago.
I know, but did give your last name. Okay. Sarah?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Sarah Ruth. I am a parent living in Los Angeles with two children in LAUSD. They're both in high school. I'm a biostatistician. That's enough.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, my name is Steve Zeltzer, and I'm a journalist, and I do a radio show called Workweek on KPFA Pacifica in Berkeley, and I've been covering the issue of privatization and education for many, many years, both on Labor Video Project, which I produce, and other areas.
Okay. And last but not least, Kathleen.
Hi, I'm Carol. I'm a former government attorney for the California Commission on Teacher Credentialing, and I became a government whistleblower, initiated a state audit, and witnessed a number of abuses, mostly regarding teachers, but also ed code violations that had risk to students. And I've since become a public education activist, and have appeared at presentations, have written a few articles, and have been on various radio shows over the last little over 5 years now.
Okay. For those of you who have not seen our promotion on Facebook this past week, this show is about... this show is about the privatization of public education in California, yes. But also, California, in my opinion, is becoming the mecca for the privatization of what I call everyone and everything, as well as the capital of the charter school movement. And today, we're going to jump on the big picture of how, why, when, and who turning California into the privatization mecca that it is becoming. Then we are going to segue into the charter school movement as a specific example of this turning California into a privatization mecca. Also, in that promotion, I talk about the fact that all of this is happening in a blue state. Why did I highlight a blue state? Mainly because Democrats, this is California, Democrats, governor, majority in the Senate in a similar year, much like New York was for a while, Democrats, governor, control of the assembly or the various houses of legislature there. And yet we are becoming the mecca for privatization. And for sure, there are some areas in which we lead the nation in terms of privatization of public education. I want the public to know that when we talked in the past about the Democrats being just like the Republicans, that you can't tell them the difference between the two or they're both sides of the same coin, California is a prime example of corporate Democrats taking control of the Democratic Party and moving it to the right to stand alongside of Republicans. So that's the focus of the show. That's how the show came about. I'm going to go back to Jack because he has been involved in this as a teacher for many, many years. He's got a tremendous history. Jack, how did we and when did we start becoming a mecca for privatization?
Well, I believe that California started becoming a mecca for privatization decades ago. I mean, we can go back to No Child Left Behind and how it was instituted, but even going back earlier to the report that came out under Ronald Reagan, early in the Reagan administration, called A Nation at Risk, and that was a kickoff for a corporate campaign. The Business Roundtable spent tens of millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars, in a campaign to influence state legislatures to basically go after students, teachers, and the community through imposing standards and standardized tests. And this continued and persisted through the 1990s, and it was very much a bipartisan campaign. No Child Left Behind was supported by not just Republicans, but almost all Democrats, including the most liberal Democrats, such as George Miller from the San Francisco Bay Area in the House, and Ted Kennedy in the Senate. The idea was really coming out of the slump of the 1970s. There was a big crisis of profitability in capitalism in the U.S. and worldwide, and this was an attack overall to increase profitability by cutting back on social spending programs, among which education is one of the largest, and by attacking the community, taking away the social welfare net, and going after workers, stripping them of all defenses in the unions. It's not an accident that this rise coincided with the rise of the Silicon Valley. We can now see that kind of free market ideology through companies like Uber, which basically, you know, have no rights or as few as possible for their workers and are aimed at weakening the union still further. But in education, Oakland, where I taught, was a laboratory for such privatization. Eli Broad and his foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates and their foundation, the Fishers from The Gap and their foundation, the Waltons from Walmart and theirs, they all came in the late 1990s, and they really funded the campaign that first we saw the No Child Left Behind law, and then we saw the continuation through the gross increase in charter schools, standardized testing, huge contracts to contractors and consultants, textbook companies like McGraw-Hill, making billions, and now it's a $1 trillion market. So what happened in Oakland? Oakland was a laboratory for privatization. Much of what we see now going on in Los Angeles with the proliferation of charter school, with Eli Broad and his foundation heading a consortium of foundations that say they want to massively increase charter schools in Los Angeles and basically take over the whole district virtually. This was pioneered and piloted in a few locations around the country, in Oakland being one of the most prominent. In 2003, the Oakland School District was put into receivership by the state. The state took it over ostensibly because there was a $37 million deficit and put it in the hands of Eli Broad. Eli Broad was asked to name the state administrator, which he did, and many scores of Broad residents and interns flooded into the district and basically took it over. They had control of the district fully for 6 years. When they left, remember, they came in because it was a $37 million deficit. When they left, it was $110 million. They tripled the debt. While tripling the debt, they downsized drastically. They closed virtually every library in middle schools. In the first year, they laid off about half of the custodial staff. They laid off almost all maintenance, electricians, and glaziers and so on. Everything was
okay,
put
Jack,
into...
Yeah. Let me bring someone else in. Nina?
Sure.
Yes.
When did privatization hit in your area, and were you aware of it when it hit?
Well, I wasn't really aware of what it meant, but I guess in the 90s, a football coach was fired from a public high school because he had a no-pray, no-play policy with the football players. And so he started a charter school after being fired. So basically what he was telling the students is, if you don't go to the evangelical local church Wednesday nights, you can't play football. And I spoke on NPR radio and got calls in from many, many students who said things like, we're Catholic, so we don't go to that church. But without going to that church, we couldn't play football. And I had a cheerleader also who called in. So this was the beginning of it. And this man, we have real crony capitalism down here. This man is very good friends with who is the person who is now the mayor. And so slowly but surely, we're giving over public buildings for more and more charter schools. And I firmly believe they're trying to make it up.
Okay, I don't know if we lost her or not, but Sarah?
Yes. Well, that was fascinating about Oakland in particular. Was Eli Broad actually literally put in charge of the school district in Oakland, if I'm allowed to ask? Under what authority? I mean, he's not an educator. He's a builder.
Jack?
Maybe he's gone. Well, let me say my brief experience in Los Angeles while you get them on the line. Is that what you'd like?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm a parent here. My children went to private school and then went to public for elementary school and then went to public school for middle. And I was really quite unaware of what was going on until the school board race in the district where I live on the west side of Los Angeles, which would have been, I think, 3 years ago. And what really sort of raised my consciousness is when the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, 3,000 miles away, put $1 million into the school board race in my little neighborhood, inconsequential neighborhood. I mean, that kind of money on a school board race that so many people are unaware of, it makes you sit up and wonder, why on earth is this of any interest to somebody across the country? So that was really the start of my awareness that this was just really big-time politics going on here. I completely agree. I mean, I've since read an awful lot and really stitched together all the kinds of pieces that you're talking about, this privatization of everything, you know, that could, in fact, probably be dated, as we discussed earlier, to Milton Friedman's conversations with himself in the 50s and maybe even back before then. But certainly this is a large-scale effort to break down the public commons and make for little private fiefdoms all over the place, including as a sort of microcosm within our educational system, where you have a charter school, which is its own little island in a sea of a community. It's separate, fiscally separate. It's really very much like the rest of the effort.
Let me remind audience some history. Remember, I've talked extensively about the fact that Milton Friedman was an advocate for anti-social network, anti the New Deal that was brought in by Roosevelt after the crash of the late 1930s, and all of the presidents that sort of like kept the social network in place. Milton Friedman was just the key economist of a line of economists who were fair market economists. He became very influential, and in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan became president here, Margaret Thatcher became prime minister in England, Yao Ping became prime minister in China, and Augusto Pinochet became dictator in Chile. All four of those individuals adopted the neoliberalism political economy that was being advocated by Friedman. Chile took it to the max in that they privatized everything and everyone, and they murdered hundreds of thousands of people to establish this privatization of a nation. So when I talk about privatization of everything and everyone, that's what I'm referring to, is that actually not just public education being privatized, but everything that can be turned into a profit or made into a commodity become privatized. Education is under the gun because, as Jack mentioned earlier, we spend in this country, and you've heard me say this I don't know how many times, between pre-K and PhD at the public school level, we're talking somewhere between $1.2 to $1.5 trillion. Globally, over $7 trillion. That's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Okay, let's get back to topic. Steve, when did you become aware of the privatization that was taking place in California, and how?
Well, I've been following it for the last 15 or 20 years. And I think the Milton Friedman and the neoliberal capitalists ideologically had an agenda to privatize everything, as you're saying. And a key target of privatization, of course, is public education. And after the Chile coup, the government moved to privatize education in Chile, as well as Social Security and other things. So this has been going on a long time. And what has happened is that politically, the Democrats and Republicans have both led the way in privatization, arguing that, you know, you really can't provide a public education, a good public education for people. You have to go into a lottery. You have to have a lottery to get a good public education. And basically, it's the resegregation of schools around the country that have forced. There are no schools in rich areas that are being closed down. The schools are being closed down in poor, working-class, Black, Latino areas and restructured. And what was most concerning is that there's no political movement in the United States against privatization. You have unions like SEIU, AFSCME, AFC-NEA that have millions of members and hundreds of millions of dollars, but there's no political education campaign. So I felt that there needed to be a political, national political education campaign to unite education workers and students and parents, along with all workers, postal workers and others against privatization to educate the public about who's really behind this and what their agenda is. And in California, their agenda is the destruction of public education. That's why we have this proposal to have an initiative that would repeal the charter laws that were passed in 1992.
Okay. See, Kathy, the question being, the privatization, California becoming the mecca for privatization. When did you become aware of this? Well, first of all, I think you agree with it, and then when did you become aware of it, and what made you aware?
Well, privatization in general, I think, I certainly read Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine and everything that Jack and Steve and others have mentioned, I was aware of. In terms of public education, though, I don't think I had a laser focus on that until I was literally in the belly of the beast, so to speak, working inside the government and seeing a lot of charter school promoters and a lot of bias and a lot of conflicts going on, and I really started connecting dots and really became more laser focused on the privatization of public education, which quite honestly, I don't think I was fully aware of prior to my experience.
And that experience was when? What year?
So I initiated a state audit of the agency that I worked for, Commission on Teacher Credentialing, almost 5 years ago, 2010. Prior to that, I, saw things that, legal violations, a number of things. I won't go into great detail because I'm still on litigation, but I saw a lot of legal violations, and it didn't add up. And so I was retaliated against. I lost my job. I was put on administrative leave for 2 months before I, was told why I was being put on administrative leave. And during that time, I did a lot of reading. I was connecting backgrounds of the commissioners, and it all pointed to privatization of public education, promoting the charter school movement. There were even various commissioners that had economic interests with the company Pearson, that, as you know, is the big multinational testing corporation, and they also sell textbooks and do evaluations. And so since that time, I have been doing a lot of reading, a lot of research, and connecting the dots and the players, and looking at Broad, and he seems to place these people in these school districts.
We'll get to that at the last segment of the show. Jack, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. The resistance. When did it start? In my view, it's almost non-existent, and that's being polite. But I know you have an extensive background in resistance movement. So we have the California becoming the center of privatization. We have the politicians, we have the outside influences all coming together. When did a resistance movement start, and what has it done? Give me an assessment.
Well, perhaps I should read a brief quote from Wayne Johnson, who was president of the California Teachers Association, CTA, which had 340,000 members when he was president in 2001, because I think it gives a good idea of what the unions haven't done. Back then, Johnson spoke pretty blisteringly about what was happening in the attack and the failure of the national teacher unions to mount a response. So I think if we're going to talk about the resistance, we also need to talk about what hasn't been done. And why, when you say it's been almost non-existent, the teacher unions combined, the NEA is about 3 million members and the AFT more than 1.5 million. They're nearly 40% of organized labor. Imagine what could be done. But instead, we have this situation. Now, mind you, this is almost 15 years ago. Johnson says, American education is in crisis, a crisis of poverty, of underfunding, of poor kids not getting what they need, of administrative mismanagement, of huge teacher shortage. At the same time, the U.S. and California rank so low in educational funding and serious problems facing children of our public schools, right-wing advocacy groups and corporate leaders demand educational reform. They say our schools are failing and teachers are failing. Most of the reforms they advocate have nothing to do with the problems facing us. They only advocate reforming teachers and teacher contracts. I call it the phony reform. To reform a public school system that's underfunded, overcrowded, and running out of teachers, they demand more teacher accountability, more testing, more punishment for kids and teachers in low-performing or priority schools. As one of these advocates of phony reform, the Los Angeles billionaire Eli Brook told me in a one-on-one hour-and-a-half meeting 3 weeks ago, public education needs merit pay and teacher transfer and seniority rights should be eliminated from teacher union contracts. He calls this progressive unionism. I call it sellout. Secretary of Education Rod Paige and Mr. Broad are proposing this concept of progressive unionism, and the NEA and AFT have endorsed the plan. This is union and teacher bashing, not educational reform. Randy Weingarten, who is now the president of the AFT nationally, was one of the group of a dozen trainers at the initial Eli Broad Urban Superintendents Academy, along with the heads of many of the largest corporate foundation privatizers, and along with Rod Paige, George Bush's Secretary of Education. So the teacher unions, unfortunately, nationally, did not respond effectively, but rather were willing to believe that these were actual reforms, or to say they were actual reforms, to believe that in any event they couldn't fight it. They still, to this day, the national unions at best make passive sounds and don't fight aggressively. So it's been left to community groups, to student groups, parent groups, and some union locals to try to fight back. And that's why the fight has been, to date, somewhat scattered and divided, although there have been marked major pushbacks against it. Now, in Oakland, we had a series of campaigns in Oakland and California. In 2009-2010, there was a very big movement in California to defend public education. It started with opposition to a fee increase at the University of California and to cutbacks in staff and courses. It spread to K-12. And on March 4th, 2010, we had mass demonstrations in Oakland and San Francisco, Los Angeles. We had mass marches and so on. It was aimed directly at defending public education and opposing privatization of public education. And many of the people involved since have gone on to fight against the increase in student debt. As I'm sure many listeners know, student debt now surpasses credit card debt. It's past $1 trillion. And students, when they graduate from college, are essentially made into indentured servants. It's also spawned a large movement now, which is going on all over the country, for opting out from the standardized tests. And the standardized tests, as Kathy mentioned, you know, are very tied in with the whole empire of Pearson and others in this multi-trillion dollar empire.
Okay. Go ahead. One more thing.
Yeah, one more thing is, I think that the fight against charter schools is very important. Oakland, under the state takeover, they quadrupled the number of students in charter schools, and they're increasing it again now. So that in Oakland, the public, under the state takeover, the enrollment in public schools fell by one-third, while the enrollment in charter schools quadrupled. This wasn't by accident. Eli Broad, remember, and his minions were put in charge of the district. It's done deliberately to disenfranchise the public because charter schools get public money, but they're privately run. They say they're public schools, they're not public schools. They do it to downsize public education and as part of an overall attack on the working class and the working class's living standards. And I think it's very important for us to realize that this is not an accident. It's not something new. They've been planning this for some time, and it's very important to fight it.
Okay. Sarah,
Yes.
From the parent standpoint.
I couldn't agree more. I love listening to these things. Let me quickly correct some of the figures. You mentioned over 100 charters in Los Angeles. There's actually in 2014-15, the last school year, there were 274 charters. That's both what they call affiliated and independent. So that refers to whether the charter is through the whether money is received through the chartering agency or not. So slight technical difference there. But
this is for Los Angeles.
This is
not
for
the
LA. Well, it's for LAUSD, which actually includes. It's a complicated unified school district that actually includes some regions that are outside of the city of Los Angeles. It's a big, big, massive place. I think that the number of school entities was 1,010 for that same period, of which 274 were charters.
So 20% or so.
Actually 25%. So that means that of the students attending LAUSD in 2014-15, and these are by figures that are come out of LAUSD's charter school division. And those figures would probably look a little different from the numbers that come from DataQuest from the state. But according to LAUSD, 75% of the students themselves were enrolled in regular public district schools, while 25% were enrolled in charters last year. So I was pretty surprised at how high those numbers are. But you're also asking about the resistance, as it were, on the ground. From a parent's perspective, you know, there are pockets. What happens is that because of Prop 39, a proposition passed in California, with basically, as best I understand it, a stealth move that had a sentence tagged on to the end of it that said, more or less, effectively, if a charter school is looking for space and they can ask for it from a public school, and if there is space in the public school, they're mandated, they must give it to the charter school. I'm sure that some of these legal expert guests of yours can modify that understanding a little bit, but it has created havoc from a parent and a child standpoint on the ground in terms of our schools. The schools themselves and a child's experience going to school. They experience in huge numbers what are termed co-located schools. You'll have a campus, a school, that has debatably been labeled to have extra space. I mean, that in itself is not at all clear. But be that as it may, a charter is permitted to come into that school on the campus itself and set up separate digs. And so the children on the ground experience, you know, you really literally get a chicken wire fence where one set of kids are looking across at another school with much shinier, glitzier resources. You know, they'll have concerts or they'll have plants and gardens and smaller classes and the like. And so that creates a great feeling of unhappiness among the student and parent population, and you will see scattered locations on the west side of LA, at least where I live, where people really are rising up against this, and it has not always been pleasant. There have actually been literal physical altercations where people just get very angry about the disparity of amenities available to their children. And
let me ask a question then. You said parents are beginning to get mad about the situation. Is that going to articulate into any type of mass movement, both in terms of getting people to run for office, getting people to vote for candidates that would be pro-public school? That's when we talk about resistance. What form is there resistance, and what form is it taking? And we're going to have to move on to, if she's still on the line, to Nina.
I'm still here.
Okay. Answer that question.
Well, it reminds me of the 1968 walkout in the LA schools where the Chicano students walked out. And then the Chicano students had to educate their parents. And then the parents, you know, went to the school board and there was a sit-in for a week.
And eventually they got, you know, they got some of the things they were wanting. But right now down here, this whole year I've been focusing on the charter school issues in my area, San Diego County. And we found that most people think it's better to get their kids in a charter school. That's sort of the spin. And so it's been a matter of educating and re-educating local parents to let them understand that every time a child goes to a charter school, that's less money for the public school. And I think, I know that's being done on purpose to basically defund public schools. So down here, we started an Escondido Public School Advocacy Group. We go to the board, school board meetings. We talk. I recently published an article. Down here, it's not so much schools, charter schools not being able to use the public school building, but they're using church buildings. And apparently, that's okay. So you have these giant crosses behind charter school graduations, and the line is very confused down here. And I'm not confused about it, but they're basically church schools, and all the real private church schools are now closing because nobody has to pay for a private religious education anymore, because that's what the charter schools are doing down here. So what happens, because you can get chartered from a contiguous county, they get chartered, people will get their charters from little teeny school districts like Julian and Dehesa, who have maybe 200 students each total, and then they'll give them a charter because they get between 1 and 3% of the money that's made, and then they can go to any city and set up their school in any little church, and the local school board has no oversight at all on them.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. So this is, I know, it's just a nightmare. So we've been writing about this. The interesting thing is the textbooks are teaching religion as history. They're teaching intelligent design in science classes and on. So down here in particular, that seems to be what's happening is the religious, the evangelical religious right wing are educating our students as they wish with taxpayer dollars.
Okay.
May I jump in? Or
yeah.
You need to go on. I mean, that's fascinating. We have some of that sort of chicanery here with the playing of the chartering agency. There's at least one charter I know of that had all kinds of shenanigans going on with their lottery and other things, and eventually LAUSD said, forget it, you know, we're not giving you a charter, and they say, okay, whatever, and they just go to the county and get a charter from them.
Exactly,
they're still in the same
yeah.
place, still doing the same thing. It's not necessarily religiously focused, but it is related to your question that, you know, these little fiefdoms of schools, they set up a kind of a cult-like atmosphere among other sort of narratives that are being fed from the Eli Broad end of the spectrum in the sort of directed effort to capture a market share. There's a cultural jingoism associated with the schools that makes us better than them, and mm-hmm. it results in that's in quotes, it results in a sort of culture where people don't want, they hear no evil and see no evil, and it's very, very difficult to raise the consciousness, as it were, of our fellow parents. It's really hard to get through to them. So, for example, with that school that just took their charter elsewhere, that's considered a win. Instead of it actually raising the eyebrows of parents who go, oh, my goodness, you know, what's going on here? There's a problem. They're thinking, oh, those people, they're such losers. But look, we figured it out. We got through the system, and now everything is okay. It's really hard to fight against that.
Well, okay, let me step in. We're going to take and now pivot to the charter school issue itself. You ladies have already brought us there, but let's do it now in a more formal fashion. Kathy, that's your thing. You can take us back to the 1992 yes. legislation that created charters and bring us forward.
Okay. So California was the second state in the country, Minnesota being the first, to authorize public funding going to charter schools, authorizing the existence of charter schools. At the time it passed, 1992, the author was Senator Gary Hart, and it went into effect in 1993, and that initial law had a cap of 100 charter schools, and no district in the state could have more than 10 charter schools. And numerous things happened over the decades. As we know today, we have 1,184, by various accounts, charter schools.
That's for the state.
And, I'm sorry?
That's for the state.
That's for the state, yes. And various figures, again, I don't know how accurate they are, approximately 6% of the 6 million student population is served by charter schools, and that either being brick-and-mortar type facilities or a hybrid where they have non-classroom-based instruction, virtual or independent study, work study, or completely virtual, which is the California Virtual Academies, which run somewhere between 11 and 14 schools in the state, and that's owned by K-12 Inc., which is was started by Michael Milken, and then the second big one is Connections Academy, owned by Pearson. And so there's numerous problems that have happened, enrollment fraud, signing on for a minute, and then they get counted as their ADA more students than what actually appear. But there really is lack of oversight, lack of accounting, lack of auditing. They self-report their auditing. They self-report their finances. Fraud, a recent report came out this year that was posted in Common Dreams, a co-report by Reclaim Our Schools, which I believe is formed by both NEA and AFT, and the Center for Popular Democracy came out with a report this year claiming, and it was entitled, Waste, Fraud, and Lies, Charter Schools Cheating Communities Out of Hundreds of Millions of Dollars. And it cited fraud and bribery and conflicts of interest between government decision makers and having personal interest in the charter school industry, and it is an industry. It's just a big cash cow. Head fudge managers are involved, Wall Street bankers, private equity investors, and everything from construction loans to real estate investment trusts and various convoluted scams involving lease agreements to everything from transportation services, technology setup to vendors for food. I mean, you name it, it's all being paid for by taxpayer money, and it is a huge, huge lucrative money-making scheme. And they have, and these, you know, the people that you have on today, it's great to hear all these stories, and you can see why there's just so many loopholes. They are not allowed to teach any kind of religious doctrination. That is actually in the Ed Code section, the Charter School Act, and yet they do. They, the Prop 39, which was, I believe, a ballot initiative passed back in 2000, was to ensure all, California public students shared facilities equally, or that's how it was, promoted. But as we've heard from Sarah and others, there's just numerous abuses, and the resources and the money is going to charter schools, and public schools are being closed.
Let me say we have about 5 minutes left.
Can I say one story about that?
Make it micro, thin, short.
Okay. One of the rules is you have to have a similar number demographically in our area of Latino students. The biggest charter schools are in Latino areas. So in order to satisfy English language learners, rather than let the local Latino kids who live a block away from the school in, one school here imported 35 students from China, and that's how they satisfied the demographic.
It's crazy.
They're very inventive.
Okay, now, I just got a message from one of my team saying, let Sarah tell us about the demonstration at a local elementary against co-location tomorrow at 7:30. Give me 30 seconds, and we're going to pivot to the repeal efforts among us who are trying to fight charter schools. Sarah, do the thing.
There's a demonstration that's called for 7:30. I do not know about this. Actually, I guess I do.
Yeah, I mean, there are... So you asked about how the resistance, the form it takes on the ground. I mean, my observation is that when there is one or two key people who are really sensitized and aware of the situation, and they're key and they're local, and they keep hammering, they keep knocking on doors, and they keep explaining, they can actually... They can build an awareness that tips the scale. I mean, you seem to need a certain percentage of people who are, you know, actively willing to stop barbecuing in the backyard and go out and advocate for their best political interests. It's hard to overcome that hurdle of inertia. And, I mean, in all fairness, life as a parent, and maybe it was always like this, it is absolutely frenetic. And the idea of taking your time to
okay, we got to move on.
It's hard.
Okay. Now, today there's something happening here in Los Angeles, and then tomorrow there's something even bigger happening in Los Angeles. Kathy, tell us about those two events.
Okay. Well, today we are working on building support to repeal charter school laws in the state. I mean, we've heard some stories. We didn't get into segregation of student populations, unaccountable boards, all the money scams. So we are working on building support. There's a strategy session meeting that's happening today in Los Angeles, but it's really to build up to the bigger event, which is tomorrow at noon in front of the Broad Foundation. There will be a rally to save our public schools and tell Eli Broad these are our schools, not his schools. And we are going to repeal charter schools laws once and for all. So that's noon at 2121 Avenue of the Stars in Los Angeles, California. Be there. It's very important if you're in the area.
Let me interject. This appeal movement is obviously a statewide movement to get an initiative on the ballot and try our best to get parents to wake up and realize what charter schools are really about, and to overturn charter laws that, if left to the legislatures, it would never happen. One note back to you about Stoner Elementary in Culver City.
Mm-hmm. To me? About Stoner?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yes, that is one of these locales that where people physically demonstrated, fists flew. I mean, it was not a pleasant scene. People were actively, physically unhappy with the co-location of this school. But before you go, it was mentioned, one key social point here is the resegregation of our society, that this charter school, you know, privatization is one thing. It's political ideology. But we live in a world that we might want to be more diverse in social nature. So there's a blowback, if it will, sociologically, that's really hard for everyone to live with. It's really important. It's a huge fallout.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, there's a demonstration at Stoner tomorrow, as well as the demonstration at Broad Foundation tomorrow.
And if I can just mention the online petition, if you want to get involved, part of the problem is educating the public. The corporate media controls all of our, you know, airways. Education Nation was funded in part and controlled by NBC, and we saw that. And then PBS even is funded by the Bill and Melinda
Gates.
Okay,
you gotta talk about the petition.
The online petition is at iPetitions, and just Google iPetitions and repeal charter school, and you'll see our petition. Please sign.
Okay. Folks, I'm sorry we got to end right now. We were 7 minutes late getting started, and we're out of time. And with that, I want to thank all my guests. And this is an ongoing issue, an ongoing part of the war, and we will revisit this topic very, very soon in terms of charter schools itself. With that, I must say goodbye and hope to see everyone back next week. Thank you all.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.